Okay, let's take your phone calls with Evan Siegfried as we talk about his work, GOP, GPS. And if you're a millennial or a Generation Xer or a baby boomer or whatever, check in with us and let's put that down because that'll make this a little more interesting, I think. Okay, welcome back. Evan Siegfried with us. We're going to get to your calls as well. Amazing work done, I think, to put all this together, by the way, Evan. Good job.
Oh, thank you. I wrote it over 7 weeks. I started actually just after Christmas in 2015 and finished in early February of this year. And it was a lot of work, a lot of stats that I had to pull together. And I really wanted to find new things to talk about that more people had not heard about, because that way we could actually accomplish more. Take, for example, you know how there's Uber, and now there are all these different services that they're saying, we're Uber, but for food delivery or something else.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are many healthcare companies that are going out and trying to be the Uber for healthcare. So it's actually 100% legal. They're doing what's called telemedicine.
And oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I've been looking into that as a possible client, believe it or not.
Yeah, it's actually wonderful. Telemedicine, where you can literally open up an app. I use the health insurance carrier Oscar in New York, which is a millennial sort of geared health insurance carrier. And I can open up the Oscar app and say, you know, I want to talk to a doctor right now. And within 5 minutes, I will be on the phone with a board certified doctor who has my medical records, which I provided them, and everything. And I can say, well, I'm having a stomach ache, you know, it's flu season, I didn't get my flu shot. And they can call up my local pharmacy and say, oh, we need to give Evan this medication, and that, and the pharmacy will deliver it right over. And that probably takes out of my entire day, including waiting for the medication to be delivered, an hour to 2 hours tops. And if you look at the old system, people have to actually call up their doctor, say, I need an appointment. Most doctors, especially in urban areas, say, well, you know, it's going to be a couple day wait because this is not really
A couple weeks.
Yeah. In New York City, it can be 3-4 weeks. And so they get frustrated. Now, if you look at the cost of a telemedicine visit, it's about $50, and almost every private insurer covers it. But if you are an urban resident and you're on Medicare or Medicaid, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, does not cover it for you.
That's right.
Because they believe that telemedicine is completely ridiculous if you live in an urban area. Because they think that, well, you live close enough to a doctor's office, so you don't need to get on the phone to a doctor or use an app to speak to a doctor, so we're just not going to cover it. And in New York and other urban areas, more and more doctors are not accepting Medicare and Medicaid patients because they know the reimbursement rates are so bad. So this drives many people who have Medicare and Medicaid to go to the emergency room for non-critical care. In New York City, the average wait from the waiting room to get actually into the emergency room is 4 hours.
Oh, my God.
Then once you get in, it's another 12 hours on average before you're discharged.
And then you're dead.
So it could be dead. I mean, you could have a hangnail, but and hopefully you don't die of that. But it's ridiculous. And then if you walk out of the emergency room, you're going to be billed on average $1,250 for non-critical care. And 96% of emergency room visits are non-critical care. And when you have a system that is basically having it so that Medicare and Medicaid are paying 25 times what they could be paying for the same care, that will then it's absolutely crazy. It also puts a strain on the emergency room doctors and staff. So they're going to have more and more people that they have to see, and they're not going to be able to give as good and personalized care to many different patients that really need it. So if I go in because I'm on Medicare or Medicaid, and I have a stomach ache, and I think I'm coming down with the flu, but it's nothing terrible, I'm taking away from somebody else's time, and I'm putting more stress on the system. And Medicare and Medicaid will not choose the smarter path, despite many hospital executives screaming bloody murder, saying, please do this. This would help us in immeasurable ways. And millennials because they're so technology and app focused, I think they're going to be the generation that actually, once we start talking about this, they're going to be the ones to push it through, because they want to see Medicare and Medicaid be there for themselves when they need it, if they ever need it.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Chris in Baltimore, who is a millennial east of the Rockies. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you doing?
Great.
I just wanted to say that earlier in the show, you talked about how frugal the millennials are. And I think a big part of that is the college debt that the millennials are having to pay. I'm a millennial, and just coming out of college, you know, I have well over $100,000 in school loans, and I'm not going to be able to buy a house anytime soon or anything like that. So it's definitely taking its toll on the millennials, and the government's going to have to step in and do something.
All right, your reaction to that, Evan?
Oh yeah, Chris is definitely not in a unique situation. Many millennials have hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of college debt. Now, if you go and you look at what we can do, well, I'm a Republican, so I don't think the government should be interfering in private business. And private universities have the right to set their own costs. However, with public universities, we can exert pressure on them to be fiscally responsible. If you look at, say, the University of Texas at Austin, which opened up a dorm for its students that has executive conference rooms, a gym, a spa that includes a sauna and steam room, they have maid service. Obviously, the university is going to be passing these costs along not only to the students themselves, but the taxpayers. So it's going to increase cost of tuition and room and board. And the taxpayers are going to be on the hook for putting together these really luxurious dorms. I remember with the college I went to, the dorms were, you know, it's a little concrete room with a really bad bunk bed and really terrible wooden desks, and that's it. Now these kids have really lavish apartments, and I understand why colleges are doing it, because they're trying to compete and get as many kids to come.
Well, and they charge for it.
Yeah, it jacks up the price. So we need to actually we have to be responsible and turn to public universities and say, you need to stop spending like a drunken sailor in a whorehouse.
Well, we're going to Florida now. Ron is with us, the baby boomer. Hey, Ron, go ahead.
Hello, George. One of these nights I'm getting over the line, I've got several good stories to tell you.
Great.
But I am talking on a flip phone tonight, and one of your guests' first comments tonight was that if you don't have a smartphone, something's wrong with you. Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with me. I like the old ways. I was raised in the 60s. We had a one gas pump little grocery store on a dead-end dirt road, and we had a telephone, and we had two ledger books and an adding machine, one for what we bought, one for what we sold. We got along pretty good and had a good business. And I just liked the old school ways, and I didn't appreciate you guys talking to me like that. I know I speak for thousands of people when I say I will never have a smartphone until I am mandated and maybe even have the gun cocked at my head. So y'all have a good night and take care of yourself. I'll call back again and tell you something.
All right, Ronnie. And Evan, I'll let you explain that. I don't think you intentionally meant
to. No, Ron, my apologies. What I said or meant to say was that in the eyes of millennials, if you're another millennial and you do not have a smartphone, there's something wrong with
right.
you. We don't have any issue with people who consciously choose not to have it, who are not of the millennial generation.
Years ago, Evan, I had a smartphone, and I was at my favorite restaurant, and some girl came up to me who knew me as the talk show host, and she said, I'm going to tell you something. And I said, what? She said, an older guy, you're pretty good looking. And I went, well, thank you. She said, unfortunately, your flip phone makes you look like a dinosaur. And she walked away. I mean, I went, whoa. I mean, I came into it late, but what Ron exactly, Evan meant that the millennials think you're a dinosaur if you don't have a smartphone.
And you're a millennial as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You remember the phones that we used to have attached to our car, or those old Motorola's that looked like Army phones?
Oh, I remember them from growing up. I grew up in the 80s and early 90s, and I remember that my parents, we got a cell phone for our car, and it was literally bolted into the car in between the passenger and driver's seat, and it had probably about 20 minutes of talk time, 4 hours in roam time. And I remember that my dad always complaining about how big the cell phone bill would be. You know, we're talking hundreds of dollars for 10 to 15 minutes of calls. So we've really come a long way since then.
Let's go to the baby boomer, Brian in Indiana. Hey, Bri, go ahead.
Howdy, George.
Hello.
I was calling in about all these privacies that we're giving up on our downloading these apps all the time. And I think that people ought to be aware of looking at those and making sure that they want to allow people access to all your information they want. They want access to your mic, to your camera, to be able to take pictures, to be able to have all your contacts, to have access to your SD card. And these things scare me, and I'd like to ask your guest if he knows what is possible through these companies that you give permission to have as good access to your phone as you.
All right.
Well, I think that's a very, very good point, because a lot of people don't recognize that there are issues with when you download certain apps with what levels of your own personal privacy you give up, because you have to accept their terms of service by clicking the agree, or you can't use the app. Remember Pokemon Go that came out a month ago?
Oh my God, what a craze.
I tried it for one day, didn't understand it, and then deleted it. They got in trouble because there was something in their terms of service that said, we have the right to look at your email and read it. And it was, people freaked out because somebody actually, that was overkill for any company. And people said, why do you need to read my email if I'm just trying to catch a Pokemon? And don't tell me what a Pokemon is. I'm an older millennial. I don't understand Pokemon whatsoever. But it raised a very, very important point. We need to work on privacy for online platforms and apps. Many companies do ask to see certain bits about you based upon your phone usage because they like to collect data on their users, not for any nefarious plan or plots, but because they want to see how are users using phones so that they can understand trends and be out ahead of it and not miss out on where the market and consumers are going. So think of it this way. If cable companies had known that many users were going to cut the cord and go to Netflix and Hulu, if they had that information in advance, it would have helped them to adapt. And this is the same thing. Unfortunately, Congress has not really gotten its act together on both sides of the aisle and sat down and said, all right, we need to have a universal bill of rights for online privacy. This is what people can, this is what you can and can't take away from people if you're a company.
What amazes me, Evan, is the technology for certain things. For example, I was looking for a dehumidifier for the St. Louis studio, which is in a cave-like structure, and it leaks. It gets wet, and it's been very humid in St. Louis, and the humidity in the studio was 75%, way too much, should be about 35%. So I'm just online. I already have a humidifier for it, but I wanted to get a second one. So I'm online looking at humidifiers, and every ad I'm looking at, I mean, every website I go to do research for the show, up pops an ad for a dehumidifier. It was absolutely amazing. And, you know, I realized that these ads are programmed to follow you no matter what you look. So about a year and a half ago, I get an email from a listener who is chastising us for a guest's website. And he said, how could you put this guy on? He's got porn on his website. And so I go to the website. I don't see any of that. I give it to producer Tom. He doesn't see anything like that. It's a straight, legitimate website, and the guy's a good guest. It dawned on me that this guy was looking at that stuff, and it followed him when he looked at the website of my guest.
Yeah, that is basically because of cookies, which are little tags in your browser that say, this is where you've been visiting. Now, if I have a website, the ad space, I don't control what ads are going up there. I'm renting the space for ads that are targeted to the person who is visiting my website. So if you had visited my website and I had ad space on there, which I was selling to a company that sold ads, such as Google, you would see the humidifiers. The man who emailed you would see his porn, and you know my parents would probably see a random book or something along those lines. So it's targeted to you, the individual.
It is amazing technology.
It's not like walking down the street and seeing a giant billboard that'll probably only mean anything to 2 out of every 10 people that walk down the street.
I mean, if you're looking at tires, the tire ads are going to find you. If you're looking at a car, the cars are going to find you. If you're looking for a refrigerator, the refrigerator ads are going to find you. It is truly remarkable technology.
It's absolutely remarkable. And one way you can actually combat that is every time you use your web browser, before you shut it off, just go into your cache and clear your cookies. And that'll delete it, and it makes you a little bit harder to target with ads.
I actually like it. You know why? Because it makes it easier for you if you are going to buy something.
So you are a humidor aficionado, humidifier aficionado?
That's right. I've become an expert on humidifiers. Let's go next to Chris, truck driving in Mississippi. Chris is a baby boomer. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey.
I just want to say I love your show. I'm a longtime listener.
Thank you.
And first-time caller. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to ask Evan about first of all, I want to say I've been on smartphone for 5 years. Love it. Live by it. I've had a computer in my home since 96, raised my boys. We're all Republicans. But what I want to know is how can you know what the polling is true or real when there's hardly any millennials with a house phone, let alone, I don't even have a house phone anymore. We all have cell phones. So how can you, when they say polling is done at home phones, how can you track that? How is that true?
And she's right. Most people do not have landlines anymore.
No, most people don't have landlines. I'm actually a millennial with a landline solely because it was cheaper when I got my cable and internet. They said it would be $10 a month cheaper if I got a landline in addition. So I'm one of those odd millennials. But with regard to polling, polling companies aren't still using the same formulas they used in the 90s. They understand that demographics are constantly shifting. People's political attitudes, the number of independents, number of Republicans, number of Democrats, number of landline people, number of cell phone people, it's always constantly changing. It's either going up or down. Polling companies, at least good ones, are trying to constantly stay up to date with that. So they'll adjust, and they will try and get to many different, they will try and get to cell phone users.
Well, the technology will do it, to be sure. Evan, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Evan Siegfried with us. His book, of course, is GOP, GPS. Where do you get the book, Ev?
You can get it on Amazon right now in hardcover.
Talking about Amazon, there you go, huh?
Yep, and you can get it everywhere on Tuesday, actually. Coming out on Tuesday, so it's a big time and an exciting time in my life, as I'm hopefully not going to have to live with my parents if this doesn't do well.
How's the public affairs world?
The public affairs world is a little different. It's a lot of fun right now. It certainly is giving us a lot of things to talk about with the presidential race and all the other elections that are going on. And it's just sort of a very interesting time to be alive and observing and commentating on it.
I'm going to ask you a twofold question here. If you were an advisor for Hillary Clinton, what would you tell her to concentrate on?
Hillary Clinton is going to have to keep defining Donald Trump in the way that she wants him, the public to view him. She's going to want the public to view him as an unstable, unqualified, man who lacks the temperament to be president. At the same time, she's also got to go out and present an alternative as to why she should be trusted with the presidency. She needs to say, I can do this on the economy. I can make your life better. Because every one of us, be us millennials, Generation X, or baby boomer, or silent generation, we all sit around the dining table at night and we look at our bills and we say, how am I going to pay for these? Who's going to help me best do that? And that's what a presidential or any election comes down to.
And I've got to tell you, as we get close, I hope some of them take your advice.
Listen, I would love it if both candidates stopped insulting one another and actually sat down and said, this is what I'm offering in terms of policy, and this is why it's better than the alternative. I think that would be really constructive for the country, not just in the election, but once whomever wins assumes office, it gives us a good place to go to and have an actual discussion about how we're going to do it. In my book, everybody believes that everybody wants the same thing. We want the country to offer opportunity and prosperity for all Americans. We just differ on how to get there.
All right, next up, let's go to Jay in Texas. Jay is a millennial. Here you go, Jay. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I wanted to talk about the previous caller that talked about student loans.
Sure.
I've been going to school for 6 years, college, straight out of high school. I've been going to school for 6 years. I've paid for it all, and I go to full-time school.
No student loans. You're paying. As you go, you pay.
I'm paying. I've been working today since it's summer break. I've been working since about 5 a.m, and I just got off.
Oh my God,
I
Jay!
I saved my money up. I get frustrated with these people talking about student loans because I worked my butt off. I was taught as a kid that if you want something, you got to go for it, and that's how I am. That's how I was raised because, you know, my dad was a soldier and he still is a soldier for 22 years.
Dedicated. What are you studying, Jay?
Right now I am doing, I switched majors again. I switched majors 3 times already. I'm doing architectural design. I'm doing a little bit of business and I'm doing also getting my master's in plumbing.
Wow.
Whoa.
Good for you. You're a hardworking guy. Dedicated. I'm impressed.
I mean, I've watched a video of a guy, a bricklayer with no legs, go bricks up and climb up a ladder with no legs laying brick. I mean, if he can do it, anybody can do it. I mean, you just got to be motivated. I save up my money during summer break. I have a family. I have a full-time job all year. I take care of them. My wife, she does not work.
I would say that you are, Jay, in the minority in terms of people doing what you do. Evan, would you agree?
I would absolutely agree. I think Jay's got one heck of a work ethic that more people should have, and we'd be doing much better as a country if everybody had that. But unfortunately, not everybody is able to put together or to excel like Jay has. And student loans are just that. Sometimes you need to go out and take out a loan, and you're going to be paying interest on it in order to go to college. There was a woman at a Bernie Sanders rally in February who screamed out, I have $200,000 in student loans and I go to Columbia University. What do I do? And will you wipe that out? And no, the answer is not to wipe it out. That's just ridiculous. We couldn't wipe out student debt by doing what the left really wants to do by raising taxes. But what we do, as I said before, have to do is find a way so that Jay and people who are paying or who are taking out loans to pay for college are actually paying less because they don't need these lavish amenities that several universities are putting into place.
Next up, we go to Brendan in St. Louis, and he's a millennial. Hi, Brendan.
Hi. I was listening to your radio show. This is my first time listening.
Well, I'm glad you found us.
Yeah. I'm really liking what I heard so far, but I was just calling to say that I kind of think I fall into the lower percent of millennials because I support Trump and what he stands for, but I do think that he needs to kind of watch what he says.
Yeah, oh yeah, you are spot on. My granddaughter's your age, Brendan, lives in St. Louis, and she's leaning toward Trump as well.
Yeah. Plus, on the smartphone issue, I chose to stick with an old keyboard smartphone, and so that broke simply because it was cheaper. You didn't have to get all the advanced data packages.
Well, you know,
yeah, I think you've hit something right on the head. It's like many millennials are staying and living at home after college with their families to save money. We are sacrificing certain things that other we're sacrificing certain luxuries, such as having the latest and greatest iPhone or living in a place of our own, in order to save money and to have that longer term payoff. And I think that goes to show that millennials themselves view that they're willing to take short-term discomfort for long-term success and stability.
Well, there's no doubt that what's happening to society right now is dramatic, and it's changing overnight. And technology, I believe, Evan, is probably one of the main influences for doing that.
Absolutely. Technology is one of the greatest things out there for us right now, be it the latest game on Xbox or the latest medical innovation that helps extend somebody's life and hopefully will find a cure to cancer or something along those lines. I think it's just a very exciting time to be alive.
I mean, Twitter's knocked off 360,000 accounts because they believe they're tied into radicalism and terrorism.
Yeah, I mean, and that's good on Twitter for doing that. I think they should do that more. I think
they all should.
I'm a big believer in free speech. But at the same time, I think anybody has the right to say something that I disagree with. However, if you're going out and promoting violence or threatening harm to somebody else, you should not be allowed to say that.
I agree.
That's a completely different thing.
I agree. And I don't think hate is free speech.
This is where it gets a little complex. I'm a Yankees fan, okay? I've said.
You are? I hate you. No,
exactly.
I'm kidding. I'm a Detroit Tiger fan.
Well, I'm sorry.
I'm not going to put you down. I'm not going to belittle you.
But I'm using just a slightly extreme example here. But I'm not a big fan of Red Sox fans. I will make fun of them until the cows come home. But, you know, I think that you have the right to say, I hate Red Sox fans. It's whether or not you're going to act on that hate. If you're saying, I hate Red Sox fans so much, I'm going to go and do something really bad to them, and then it's going to hurt them, that is absolutely inappropriate. But if you just say, I hate Red Sox fans, or they're no good because they're Red Sox fans, that's a different
thing. No, well, I wouldn't say that is hate. To me, it is what you just pointed out. The definition of hate is truly something that will harm or injure another individual. You know, you hear that a group of people on the social network will gang up on a girl or a boy in school to the point where they commit suicide or attempt it. I mean, there's something wrong with that.
Yeah, it's one downside to technology. It makes me depressed every time I read about a kid who was cyberbullied and wound up hurting themselves, if not killing themselves. And I think we need to do a better job as a society in protecting kids and adults, because adults can be bullied online too. I think we need to do a better job at policing and protecting one another and creating an environment or creating an understanding that you can say, I don't like you because you're a Red Sox fan, but if it's repeated and targeted harassment, then you should have a right to stand up or to protect yourself from that.
We're going to the baby boomer, Tom, in Riverside, California now. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Good show tonight.
Thank you.
Lively, and I'm one of the old folks. It seems we're well represented tonight.
We're on the home stretch, Tom.
Yeah, it looks like we're carrying the conversation here for the most part. I think Jay was kind of a throwback to the millennia there. He's talking about the trades and going to school. I think it really depends a lot on what you're going to school for. I think the young people have been, it's a scam. It's just like credit cards were in 1960s, 70s. You must have a credit card or you're not with it. And if you don't have one and you're not using it, and it worked very well, it threw a lot of people into debt. And I hear this message all the time the people that are young, oh, you've got to go to college. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. And I'll tell you right now, I don't know what world that a lot of people live in, but a lot of people out here don't have money for a smartphone. They don't have money for a computer. They have to write letters. They have to use the post office. It's foolishness for us to throw away all our the post office, to get rid of landlines and let the government have access to our health records, all this stuff going on. But we're being foolish as a people. We're being foolish. We're being foolish by letting a select few go in and volunteer for the Army, and they don't represent the whole American people. We should bring back the draft as well. That's a painful issue. But if you want, I'm talking now as a people of this country, not as we are the world. We're all equal. We're all diverse. We're all inclusive. But when you talk about these things, you're not inclusive if you're saying, well, if you don't have a smartphone, you're not with it. You're nobody. And I think we've hurt ourselves. We're hurting individuals out here that just ain't in that basket. You know, everybody's got, you're wanting a world that's all the same and all that. So I kind of go against what I think. The technology is fantastic, but if you're going to create a world where you've got to have a car that knows where it's going, you can't. I mean, it's ridiculous. And then you can't go into a clothing store like we did 4 years ago and pick out a nice pair of pants, a nice shirt, a nice pair of socks, and you can't physically get it. It's just not the same if you're on a computer. The computer is convenient in some ways, but it's not the same as walking into a brick and mortar store and having even I don't know what you would call it. He's got some.
Well, let me ask Evan this, Tom, for a second before we get the clock here. And that is, Tom's a baby boomer. If a millennial heard him, he'd say, no, wait a minute. I don't want to have to go in a store. I just want to sit back at my computer and order my size 9 shoes or whatever, and that's the way I like it. So, Evan, what do you say?
Well, I think actually it's really millennials take the viewpoint of, we want to have the choice to whether or not to go into the store or go on to Amazon and order my size 9 shoes. I like going into stores, but it's stores I know I'm going to enjoy. I'm not going to go to a store that I'm not going to enjoy to go and buy shoes if that's something I don't like. I'll just do that very quickly from my phone or computer. So it's really about personal choice. What do you enjoy to do and how do you enjoy to do it? And for me, when I go out and buy clothes, I don't buy them online. I actually go into clothing stores. That's me, and that's what I personally
do. Well, I buy suits. I buy suits at the store, obviously, because you need to get tailored, and I do that. I will. There are some shoes I'll buy online because my size is my size, and so I don't have to physically see them. I would say that my shopping, Evan, is probably about 70% online.
Mm-hmm.
Online, you know, furniture. The furniture that I bought for bedrooms and things. I've bought them direct from the stores, not online. Not the big items, but the smaller things. You know, just do it now. You know, I like to go to Home Depot a lot, so I'll spend time there, wandering around there. I do a lot online.
Yeah, online, because it's more convenient and you prefer doing it that way.
And I hate parking in a parking lot.
You said there are the stores you enjoy going to as well. It's personal choice.
Next up, we go to the Generation Xer in Lansing, Michigan, Todd, who happens to be a first-time caller. Todd, thank you. I'm glad you joined us.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, back when I was in fifth grade, they brought a bunch of paperwork in. I don't know who it was or what it was, but they were showing us pictures of handheld TVs and cell phones, which were in satchels or bags, you carried with yourself, and you could talk on the phones. And I thought that was pretty strange. I never thought that I'd ever see anything like that.
Well, that's a good point, but now you have.
Yeah, now I have. Now, well, within the next, let's see, it's been probably about 8 months now, I got a smartphone. I was always with a flip phone or whatever. And as far as landline, I haven't had one of them in probably, about 2 years.
How do you like the smartphone, Todd, compared to the flip?
I'm still trying to figure it out.
You'll get it, but I guarantee you, once you learn it, you'll say, gosh, why did I wait so long? Because
yeah.
It's convenient. Tom did that. Tom had a company phone, a BlackBerry, with, you know, that still had all the little buttons you had to hit, and they switched him to a smartphone, and he swears by it. He doesn't know how he lived without it.
Right. I never thought I would even get one, but some reason I decided, well, you know what, I need something different and I can actually get some news and stuff like that, because I watch regular TV. I don't have Comcast or AT&T or anything like that. So.
Okay, great. Thanks for your call, Todd. I'm glad you joined us. First-time caller, don't stay away. Don't shy away. Evan, in the waning moments here that we have, the one thing that I think a lot of people insist on as technology changes is speed. They want things done faster, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. Look at how we do things with Netflix. If you use Netflix, we've all been there where our internet slows down just a little bit and we get that sort of pinwheel. Of
yeah, inventory. And it goes back and it's rendering all over again.
Everyone. We want to have our information coming to us across the internet as fast as possible as we can. And actually, the New York Times did a study that talked about people or poorer kids in public schools. They found there's a correlation between the potential for achievement and the speed of somebody's internet. If a child has high-speed broadband internet access, they are more likely to graduate from college and earn more money over their life.
That's a great statistic. The name of the book again, GOP GPS. Evan Siegfried, the author. And when we come back in a moment, we're going to talk more about your strategies for success.